White Rocket Entertainment. White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 279. Hello, and welcome to On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment, with your hosts, Jared Albrecht, John Ringer, and me, Van Allen Plexico. Gentlemen, we are back for episode 3 of the World Cup of James Bond films. And are you guys up for some serious James Bond film discussion tonight? John, are you there and ready?
Bring it.
All right. Jared, are you there and ready?
More than ready to discuss. I've loved him since Goonies, Men in Black 3. He's going to be Thanos. He's going to be Cable. I'm down with JB, Josh Brolin. Let's do this.
This is not the Josh Brolin World Cup, I'm sorry to say.
You said we were doing JB podcast.
Yeah, no, it's James Bond. James Bond.
All right, it'll take a bit more notes, but I'll pull it through.
All right, well, by the way, there was a bit of semi-news that came out in the last couple of days. Now, I'm not reporting this as news, I'm reporting it as something that just came across the radar, and take it with a grain of salt, but one of the notoriously not necessarily reliable London newspapers reported that they have word, and of course, again, you don't know how much to believe this, but they have word that they have talked Daniel Craig into coming back for one more James Bond movie. Now, we have no way of verifying if this is true or not. And it's not the person in the London media that usually has this, you know, his track record has proven to be pretty accurate. But it is an interesting thing to think that maybe it might be true, that because I've always suspected all along that they would get him for one more movie. He always, you know, cries and hollers toward the end of making them, and then he takes a year, took a couple of years off, and he's ready to go again. So, Do you guys think we're going to get Craig back for another one, or do you think we are not? And before anything else, what is, does that make you happy or sad? Jared, what do you think?
Ooh, I'm really of two minds of it. Do I think we're going to get Craig back? Let me flip a coin. Inner coin flip sound effect here. I don't know. My spider sense says I think that we'll get him for one more.
Yeah,
I think you're right. I think he kind of gets all blustery and he feels typecast, you know, as a lot of Bond actors have done, with the fairly notable exception of Roger Moore. And he just, you know, and then like you said, he kind of gets the cool down period. He probably remembers the paycheck. He probably remembers why he fell in love with the character, because I mean he does nail the character, and I think actors like to. I think it, short version, if they give him the right story, he's coming back.
And the right director, probably. And does that make you happy, or are you ready to move on?
I could go either way. Take mm-hmm. or leave. I like Craig just fine. I'm more than happy to go to the bullpen and get Dalton back up there. I'd love to another Dalton movie.
Oh, gosh, no.
If for no other reason than to really frustrate Van.
Yeah.
No, I could really go either way on that. And And while I've got everyone's attention, if you want me to cast my next 007...
That was my third question, yeah.
Oh, okay. I can wait to get John's thoughts, then we'll cast.
So, John, the same two questions. Is he coming back, and what do you think about that?
Yes, he is coming back. It's very much a... he was like, I don't want to be James Bond, and then he looked around, and they were offering these little rinky-dink parts in other movies for a pittance, and then the Bond people were like, you know, we'll give you another $20 million to play James Bond again. He's like, yeah, okay, I could do that.
Doesn't sound so bad at that point.
Like everything else, I think it's about the money, and I think he'll come back and do one more, and then he'll ride off. I mean, I did like the way they resolved it in Spectre, where he could kind of ride away in the sunset.
Yeah.
But I think they'll come together and do one more. And I would be okay if he didn't come back. I mean, I... But I do like him as Bond a lot, so.
You know, and it occurs to me, by the way, that if they wanted Spectre to have ended, because, you know, they did so much marketing of Spectre that it's on Her Majesty's Secret Service redone almost, right down to the bullet through the glass, you know, that turned into an the tentacles of the octopus or whatever. They so presented that movie the way that it was going to be that way. I'm really kind of surprised that when he walked away with the girl at the end, some flunky like maybe Mr. Hinks or whatever, didn't shoot her, and then Bond's like, all right, I'm back. You know, I mean, that would have been a way to, I'm glad they didn't kill her, but I'm just saying it seemed like that's where they were going with it, that she would get killed at the end and he'd be all back to being Mr. Hard-Boiled Assassin again, kind of like at the end of Casino Royale. But
could always be the pre-credit sequence of the next movie.
Yeah, well, that's true. But they presented like this movie was going to be that. So anyway, it's just one of a bunch of problems I have with Spectre that we'll talk about as we go forward. Okay, so Jared, who would you want to be the next one, either this time or next, whenever? Who do you have anybody in mind?
I do have somebody in mind. A lot of people, because he's most famous for a very American role, forget that he is British. But he does clean up nice. He's dreamy. He does action. I like Andrew Lincoln from The Walking Dead.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. He has a different look for a Bond. He's not, well. Okay. John.
I don't even know who that is.
The sheriff on The Walking Dead.
I don't watch that show.
Yeah. Okay. I watched the first two seasons and can't get that part of my life back. So. There was that one episode where something actually happened, but otherwise, you know, it's terrible. But
I hate you both.
Who do you have in mind, John, if anybody?
I mean, it's not going to be Idris Elba. I don't know. None of the other people I've seen, you know, not, Loki.
Yeah. Fassbender.
Fassbender would be good.
Maybe he's. I mean, I like him.
I
could see that.
I have somebody in mind that I would like it to be almost as much as I wanted it to be Pierce Brosnan. We all know the story that Brosnan was the original choice after Roger Moore, but NBC had his contract and wouldn't let him out of it, and so it went to their backup second choice Dalton instead. shots fired. But after two movies with Dalton, they realized they really needed Pierce Brosnan to come in and save the franchise, and he did in 95 with GoldenEye. And I was so excited because Pierce Brosnan was one of my favorite actors at the time. I loved him in Noble House and Remington Steele, and I wanted him to be and the Dr. Pepper commercial. I wanted him to be Bond so bad. You know, he was Bond in the Dr. Pepper commercial years before he was actually Bond. And I was just so much wanting him to be Bond, and I was so disappointed in 87 when he wasn't able to get it. So in 95, you know, I was jumping for joy. And the guy that I'd like, that I feel the same way about now that I did about Brosnan back then, is Aidan Turner. I just think Aidan Turner would be perfect. He's so charismatic. He's got the looks. He's got the dark hair. He's big enough. He's tough enough. You guys familiar with him? No, neither one. Tumbleweeds. Okay. Well,
I'm googling as we speak.
His main role was is Poldark. He is the star of Poldark on PBS and the BBC, which is a wonderful show.
Are you just making up words now? Are you just two syllables and Poldark, cramming them together?
Poldark is an awesome show. My wife and I love it. But you've seen him in The Hobbit. He was the handsome dwarf that was with the elf chick.
I assume he's talking to you, John.
I remember that character.
Yeah. Yes, that's him.
Well, I've Google imaged him, and he is a good looking dude. I assume he's British.
Yes, he's British. He plays Poldark, and he's from that. He does a lot of action stuff, like he, you know, climbing through caves in the mines of Cornwall. Riding horses, shootouts, sword fights. He does all kind of cool stuff in Poldark. It's kind of a Three Musketeers-ish kind of a setting, but in England. So
this is on Plexico TV. That's where you see that.
It's on PBS.
because I don't think it's real.
Poldark. Poldark's a great show.
Well, I did pull up some Google images, and I see him very cleaned up and in a suit, and he does have the look. So I will give him that.
Yes, he does. And he's very charismatic. He's got kind of a deep voice, deeper than you'd think from his, you know, his image or whatever. So, okay. Well, anyway, so that's the news, is that maybe we'll get Craig back for one more. I would, for my part, I'm assuming we will. I don't hate him. He's just nowhere near one of my favorites. He just plays it in a different way than I want my Bond to be played. And that's, I guess that's the 21st century, but that's just how it is. So, all right. Well, tonight we have to do part three. We're going to close out round one of the World Cup of James Bond films. And here's how it works. Weeks and weeks and weeks ago, I went through and seeded all 24 current Eon-produced Bond films, so we don't include Never Say Never Again or that David Niven Casino Royale or anything like that, just the 24 produced by the Broccolis and the Salzmans. And I put them into groups of four each, Group A through Group F. And the way I seeded them was I put like the ones that are considered great and really popular at the top, all the way down to the ones that are considered kind of the weakest entries at the bottom of each group. And so what we're doing is having kind of round robin play where we debate them and kind of, and we vote on them 3 points for the best, 2 points for the next one, 1 point for the next to the bottom, and then 0 points for the bottom. And the ones, the movie in each group with the highest point total will move on to round two. The movie in each group with the second highest point total will move on to round two, which becomes knockout one versus two. And then we're going to take four wild cards. So four of the six third place ones get to go through. So this round we're eliminating all the bottoms and two of the thirds and filling out our single elimination brackets, okay? Basically the way the World Cup does their teams. So we've done Group A, we've done Group C, we've done Group D, we've done Group F. We kind of jumped around just to make it interesting. So tonight we do Group B, which is the number 2 seed from Russia with Love, the number 5 seed, The Spy Who Loved Me, the number 8 seed, Spectre, so we do get to talk about Spectre tonight, and the number 11 seed, Die Another Day. And we're doing Group E, which has the number 2 seed, Casino Royale, number 5 seed, For Your Eyes Only, number 8 seed, The Living Daylights, and number 11 seed, Diamonds Are Forever. And if you want to catch up, go back through the White Rocket Entertainment Network feed, because we did two previous episodes discussing those other four groups, which was a lot of fun. All right, so gentlemen, let's go ahead and do Group B, I think. So let me mark it that we're doing it. Now I remember how we score, which is we're gonna discuss each one, the highs, the lows, and then when we're done, we're gonna vote 3 points for our favorite, then two, then one, and zero for the one we like the least, and we'll add it all up. So I believe we take them one at a time. Is that right, or how did we do it before?
Or did we go person by person? I can't remember if we did it that way or movie by movie.
We went movie by movie.
Yeah.
Like, and we start with From Russia with Love. And then we scored at the end.
Yeah.
Right. And like, you take the first one, Van, and you'd farm it out. Like, you'd make John the lead on that. Highs and lows. You and I would
highs and lows.
Throw in.
That's it. And okay.
And the next one, you'd throw to something to me and then to you. So on and so forth.
I remember it all clearly now. Thank you, Jared. That exactly is what what I needed. So let's look at From Russia with Love. From Russia with Love, I believe 1963. This was based on the novel that John F. Kennedy famously read and enjoyed and recommended. And this was the second after Dr. No. So, Jared, why don't you kick us off and tell us a little bit about what you like and what you don't like about From Russia with Love.
Okay, sure. From Russia with Love is... I think it's very, I mean, there's a reason why it's the top of Group B. There's very little debate on whether or not it's a great movie. It's a great movie. It's probably the most espionage-y movie of all of them. It's very Cold War, very espionage. So, I mean, let's do some obvious highs. The train fight against Red Grant is awesome. It's got a good story. The Bond girl, help me out with the actress. Her name just fell in my head, which is weird because I love her.
Oh, shoot.
Daniela Bianchi.
Daniela Bianchi, yeah, Italian.
Yes.
Playing a Russian.
She is, in my opinion, the sexiest Bond girl ever, so it does well for me.
I can't argue
with it. Plus, she turns in a really good performance.
Yeah.
The other big high would be, I know, Van, you're a fan of The Helpers. Karen Bay is just a great character.
Yeah.
Just lots of highs. It's hard to pick out lows on such a good movie. Really the only low that I could understand, I've heard this argument from other Bond people, it's not as exciting. It's not as action-packed. It's not as stunt-oriented. And that's true, but it stands on its own merits. So those are my highs and lows. I don't want to take up too much time. I want to get you guys' thoughts.
Yeah, no, I think that's good stuff. John, what do you think, good and bad, about From Russia with Love?
I mean, it's the most spy movie of a lot of his movies in some ways. Do you know what I'm saying? It's the classic Cold War spy story. At the same time, it's still very early. I mean, it's before all the super crazy stunts and gadgets and all that stuff. And it's a lot of it is very kind of traditional spy Cold War stuff. But I do like it in that it's a very Cold War movie. And I do love the the fight on the train. And there's some really good characters too. That's the other thing, as Jerry was saying, there's some.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, From Russia with Love, I think it's a great one. I think it's one of the four or five absolute best ones. It's in a weird position because, if you consider Goldfinger, which is the third movie, to be the one where they really nailed the formula going forward, this is the movie before that, you know. But interestingly, I think Dr. No is very much in the later Bond formula where you've got the supervillain and his lair, you know, and all that. So this one's kind of an outlier because it's between between these two supervillains with their flunkies. It's just kind of Bond on a mission. And so it doesn't really fit in, but I think that's one of the strengths that it has is that it's different. It's different in a good way. It has a lot of stuff involving trying to film him in a in a compromising position. It's got spy games back and forth where, and in fact, I like the idea that in the book it was just the help me out, John, because we were talking about this before. It's the death to Smersh, right? What are they called?
Death the spies.
Spionen.
Yes, spionen.
Yeah. But in the movie, they take it one step forward, and instead of the Spectre machine, it's the Lecter machine, and Spectre becomes the evil organization that we saw in Dr. No, but now it really kind of emerges as this behind-the-scenes manipulator that we love so much. And so because of that, we get the awesome, is it Rosa Klebb? The little old lady with the spiky shoes. Oh, yes. She makes the movie. That and the fact that Karen Bay has a fully functioning submarine periscope installed in the Soviet embassy that nobody notices when it comes up out of the floor and starts looking around. I love that. I just figure those Russians are like, mousetrap is rising again. Ignore.
Yeah, their internal security could use work.
A little bit. So, yeah, From Russia with Love is just such a great movie. I even like that part of it is filmed in the Hagia Sophia. It's in Istanbul. It's one of the first where you really get exotic. Because a lot of the Bond movies, their exotic locales are really just the Caribbean. Because that's where Fleming lived. And so he liked to write about Jamaica and the Bahamas, like in Thunderball and Dr. No and everything else. But in this one, we actually get Cold War Istanbul halfway between East and West, and you get the spy stuff going on. I love that the bumbling communist agents are the Bulgarians. Isn't that just perfect? Like, the Bulgarians are the ones that are hapless and don't know what to do, and the Turks mess with them. I just think that's hilarious. So, the East Germans would be, like, super deadly, but the Bulgarians just have no clue and run into each other and just like Keystone Cops. I just love that. So, no offense if you're Bulgarian out there.
Yeah, we just lost our entire Bulgarian listeners.
Oh, man, all six of them, yeah. So anyway, yeah, I'm a very big fan of From Russia with Love. And yeah, the train, it's the first one with the train scene. And of course, that goes on to be a standard callback in so many Bond movies, but this was the first. And Red Grant, I mean, Robert Shaw, who will later fight Jaws, fights James Bond. I mean, how many actors can say they have fought both James Bond and Jaws and lost to both of them?
Jaws the shark, not Jaws the metal teeth.
Right, Jaws the actual Jaws that the metal teeth dude is named after, right, yeah. So that's pretty cool.
Oh, I just thought of another thing I love about this movie, if you don't mind me jumping in.
No.
I absolutely love that in this movie, there is a job interview conducted by Rosa Klebb that pretty much only includes a punch in the stomach with a pair of brass knuckles.
Yes.
I think every job interview should be that way. Good afternoon, Mr. Albrick. What are your greatest strengths and weaknesses? Well, I believe I'm pretty strong. Oh, my God. Oh, God.
And then
we'll
she
get
looks
back
at
to you, Mr. Albrick.
No. Then she looks up and says, he seems fit enough.
Yeah. But I think that's all job interviews should just be like, whap, and just like, oh, okay.
Oh, yeah, and your preparation for those job interviews is having a gorgeous woman in a bikini giving you a rub down on the lawn before the lady with the brass knuckles shows up. That's not a bad deal either, so. Yeah,
but that just cracks me up. Like, job interview.
I love it, yeah. And we even saw it was General Gogol, but he wasn't General Gogol in this movie. He was, and this is also the first Bond movie of many where we'll get, or several, where we get a fake out where we think James Bond is dead, but it's actually somebody in a Sean Connery mask. So that was interesting too. So yeah, a lot of neat stuff. But you don't have like the supervillain. I mean, Red Grant's not really a supervillain. He's a glorified odd job, really. There's not really, and Rosa Klebb is kind of a flunky too. You really don't have a monomaniacal villain trying to rule the world in this movie. And that's another thing I like about it. It's just different. So,
yeah. Well, yeah, I will say that you don't have that sort of mastermind villain, but I also like that Red Grant is a villain. And you don't get this a lot in the movies, in my opinion. You don't get a lot of villains that are of James Bond's caliber.
Right.
And Red Grant is his physical match. He's not stupid. He's a smart agent. So I kind of like that when James Bond can mix it up with a guy, you know, like Sean Bean in GoldenEye or Red Grant, that's like his equal, and you're really into the fight because of that, I think.
Yeah. You also get the most odd and specific set of gadgets. The briefcase has a talcum powder explosive, a throwing dagger, and some gold coins. What?
And extra ammunition.
Yeah, and extra ammunition. Who thought that's what he needs? I just can't imagine any other set of circumstances than the exact plot of this movie where he would need those things. It just... In fact, I kept thinking...
Use that every day.
As soon as Q showed him, or whoever, I don't think Q's actually in this movie, as soon as he is shown the gold coins, I'm immediately thinking, now how is he going to use those, right? Is he going to use them like to slap somebody with, you know, that strip of them? He's going to smack them with it? And he uses it as a bribe to try to save his life and as a fake out. That, okay. All right.
I like that. We should do a whole podcast on gadgets. Wait, we already
did. We already did. That's right.
Go check out our other podcast on gadgets. But I love the briefcase. I think it's very practical. I mean, in that it's got a lot of stuff in it you can use. It's got a knife. It's got bullets. It's got money.
Yeah.
Exploding talcum powder, just in case somebody messes with it.
It's just a strange, I don't know. It's just a strange,
I like it.
Company. All right. Well, let's move on to our next one in this group, The Spy Who Loved Me. I always confuse the title of these two movies. This is the 1977 Roger Moore, it's the one where what had happened, just real quick, and we've talked about these things before, but just for those that are listening for the first time now, for what had happened was that the franchise had kind of taken a dip with The Man with the Golden Gun, and so they just decided to just put everything on the line. They spent a lot more money on this movie than they had on the previous one, and it shows, by the way, and they just went all in, right? You have Jaws for the first time with the big metal teeth. You have you have essentially the You Only Live Twice plot brought back underwater. So it's kind of a cross between Thunderball and You Only Live Twice. It has a whole lot of stuff going on, but it really has a lot of money up on the screen. So, John, walk us through what you like and don't like about The Spy Who Loved Me.
It's a very 1970s movie.
Yeah.
I love it's got the big ski chase at the beginning.
Yeah.
That ends with him with the, you know, with the parachute with the British flag on it. And, you know, the plot is basically the, like you said, it's the, we're going to steal some nuclear submarines and have them shoot at each other and cause World War III and we'll survive in our underwater sea base. Mm-hmm. And in this one, Bond teams up with Barbara Bach, who is yep. Agent Triple X, the Soviet agent.
That's right on the nose.
Before that, he goes to Egypt. And he teams up with what's the Egyptian guy's name?
I don't remember.
But then they meet Jaws, and there's these scenes. They're basically the show at the pyramids
right.
at night. There's the, you know, the show being projected on the pyramids, they project it on there, and Jaws comes around and kills people and stuff. They get away and they go to the bad guy's base, and then they free the submarine crews, and he and Barbara Bach team up to stop him. And the bad guy in this case is, you know, Stromberg, and he has basically a giant tanker that he has these submarines in, and he has a hideout in Atlantis, which is basically his underwater base. Bond and Barbara Bach escape at the end, and that's pretty much the story. So it's the big things for me in this movie are Jaws. Yeah. This is his premiere. Mm-hmm. And like you said, compared to The Man with the Golden Gun, the production level in this movie is so much higher.
Yeah.
The ski chase scene is still fun to watch. The enemy base, you know, and the tanker with the submarines and stuff is very well done. There's some underwater stuff. And he has the Lotus. I forgot about that. This is the movie where he has the Lotus that drives off the pier and goes underwater with the submarine car.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's another thing where it's, you know, again, much higher level production and much cooler looking than anything we've seen so far.
Good stuff. Jared, Spy Who Loved Me.
John did a very thorough job. One of the best, if not the best, I'd have to think about this for a minute, but stunts, like John said, skiing off the cliff, popping the parachute, all done live, all done in one shot, is amazing. Of course, Jaws. Of course, the underwater Lotus. Those are the big high points for me. Just, it's really great, fun Bond movie. One of the things I like about it is very obscure, but there's a point in the movie where James Bond is riding on a spherical camera. It's the only way I can explain that. And
yes,
he's and he has to like unplug something so that they can't use the camera anymore. And it's like playing the like, I think it's another John Barry score as he's doing his action thing. It's all very 70s. Do, 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 do. And as soon as he unplugs the camera, the music actually stops too, which I always thought was a neat little effect. Like the score drops when he unplugs it. And I always thought, oh, that's kind of neat. So that's a really obscure thing to like about it. I know. But yeah, it's a fun ride. And I think there was only one other movie in 1977 that you might have could have seen instead, but I don't think Van ever saw it in 77. So.
Yeah, that's always been my thing about this movie. It could have been the greatest. I won't go there for very long, but it could have been the greatest Bond movie ever, and some probably argue it is. But I'm still going to be mad at it because I wanted to see Star Wars, and we had to go see that instead, and it was the only chance to see a movie that summer. So I had to wait months to see Star Wars because of this movie and my brother. But
it's still a fantastic plan B, though. I mean, as far as like if you had to see something besides Star Wars, you did pretty well.
It wasn't Grease, which is what I had to go see the next summer. So, yes, I agree. But that's a whole other story.
Grease, Spy Who Loved Me seems pretty badass.
Pretty badass, yes. I don't love this movie as much as some do. I mean, it's got the – John and I talked about the scores a while back. It's got that Nobody Does It Better by Marvin Hamlisch, which is an odd choice for a Bond movie, but it kind of works here. But yeah, I think about this movie, I think about submarines, I think about the Lotus, I think about Jaws. I'm not a big fan of Barbara Bach. I would have rather they had Catherine Bach, honestly, from Dukes of Hazzard than Barbara Bach. But I guess as a Russian agent, she's exotic enough looking that it kind of works. Stromberg is a pretty lame villain. He just sits there in his chair until Bond basically just shoots him in the stomach. Other than that, I mean, it's got its moments. But like I say, it is kind of a remake of a cross between Thunderball with all the underwater stuff and You Only Live Twice with the big thing swallowing up little things and kidnapping the crews to start some kind of mess. But it's not bad. It's I think it's in the upper half of Bond movies for me, but not really one of my all-time favorites. So let's move on to the third one, because I'm very anxious to get your guys' takes on this. The most recent one, Bond 24 Spectre. Now, this was the fourth Daniel Craig movie from 2015. And it was billed to be like the greatest hits of Bond, essentially. I mean, that's kind of what Skyfall tried to be in a way. And this tried to be again, which is another reason why two movies and I'm done with Mendez. I just don't want any more. Hey, look, I'm a big Bond fan. I'm going to put every scene I've ever. I guess let me just go ahead and do this one first, since you guys each had one. I'll do this one since I'm already talking about
it.
Get it out of my system.
Man forgot that we were on a show and he just started.
Yeah. Let me bring up the.
He was alone in his basement.
That's just like me on every panel, though. I just start going. Sam Mendes basically is a big Bond fan, and he wants everybody to know it. And so Skyfall and Spectre, he directed both of them back-to-back. And in both of them, he just pretty much says, look at all the Bond stuff that I know about. Look, here's Daniel Craig in a black suit with a brown shoulder holster like Roger Moore in the Haiti one, Live and Let Die. Oh, look, here's Bond in a white dinner jacket and rose like Sean Connery in Diamonds Are Forever. Enough of the homages, you know. I would just like a new movie that's new. I don't need to see Daniel Craig playing dress up as all the other actors. They even set this one up to be almost a remake of Honor Majesty's Secret Service, complete with a bullet through the glass from the famous last scene, and we don't really get that. But my main problem with Spectre. I was so looking forward to it because I love Spectre, and we hadn't been able to see Spectre for years because of a whole legal thing. Now, if you want to know the whole story, other podcasts talk about it. John and I went through it and we talked about Thunderball. But basically, Kevin McClory co-wrote Thunderball and ended up getting the rights to that story. And as part of the legal wrangling, Eon Productions could not use Spectre anymore, or they basically chose not to, or it would have been a big hassle. And so all the movies after, I guess, what's the last one where they actually openly use Spectre? I know that For Your Eyes Only, they bring Blofeld back without a name to kill him. But what was the last one where they actually, is it Diamonds Are Forever? I think it's Diamonds Are Forever. Yeah, I think it's Diamonds Are Forever.
And I'm trying to remember if they openly used the word Spectre. I mean, I know I have Blofeld, but I don't know if they actually used the word Spectre.
So after 71, basically, you don't really get Blofeld and Spectre in any meaningful way again until this movie. And I was so excited, and I was just praying that the White Cat would show up too. And of course, it being Sam Mendes, of course, why was I even worried? Of course, the White Cat shows up. But here's the problem. Here's the problem. For everything I love about this movie, including bringing back Mr. White, I love Mr. White. John and I have had a lot of fun talking about how Mr. White is the guy everybody loves and hates because he knows everything and is like, you people have no idea. You know, he just mocks them for not knowing, you know, what he knows. I love that. I love so much about this movie. They even go back to Piz Gloria from Honor Majesty's Secret Service. There's so much to like about this movie, except that the plot, the story, that opening. I'm gonna take everything away from you guys. You guys aren't going to have anything to talk about. That opening scene, which it simulates, it's not an actual single unbroken shot, but it simulates one long unbroken shot from the opening of the Day of the Dead parade all the way up until the Bond is in the hotel room with that mask on is brilliant. There's so much about this movie that's so good. It's just that it the plot lets it down, particularly in the final act. And the last thing I'll say about it, We know why it does, because the script was leaked as part of the Sony email hack, and we found out that for a couple of years there, the Sony executives knew that the final act of this movie was bad, and they never could fix it. And what they ended up filming didn't fix it. So that's my view on it. It's got so much to love, but the whole thing just does not hang together, largely because they rush the Blofeld relationship, and he's introduced, he does stuff in the foreground, and he's dead. Blofeld works best, I think, in the background. And just telling us he's been in the background of these movies, that's nothing. That doesn't do anything. Remember, say, oh, that stuff you dealt with in the other movies, that was me. Well, that doesn't, it's retroactively, that doesn't help. You need to be in the background now. So that's my main problem with it. Jared, rebut that if you can and tell me where I'm right or wrong.
I've actually never seen Spectre.
No, you liar.
Ah, once every podcast.
You liar.
Okay, I'm not going to rebut a whole lot. You and I are in a lot of agreement. I like Spectre, and that's something that I think we've said on the outset of a few of these podcasts. Just because we bag on one of these movies doesn't mean that we think they're awful movies. They're just not the best Bond movies. All Bond movies are great.
Mm-hmm.
But, no, I think you're right. I think Spectre has a lot of really great pieces.
Yeah.
Like his car, like when he had to take the other agent's car.
Yes.
And deal with all that was really good. It was like a lighthearted moment that a lot of the Craig movies have lost.
Mm-hmm.
The opening sequence, like you said, the whole thing in Mexico, the helicopter fight looked awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure there was a part where he was like flying in a plane and crashing it and stuff on the ground that looked really cool. And there's just a lot of pieces that were cool, but you're right, it didn't stitch together very well. And as I'm watching it, I'm enjoying it. The big takeaway for me is, like you said, they kind of retroactively add Blofeld, and then they're just like, it's like this big reveal. They're like, I'm Ernst Stavro Blofeld. And every old school fan like you, me, and John go, oh, yeah, Blofeld, that's cool. But for the other 75% of the people who are watching this movie that never saw the old ones, they're going, what?
Yeah.
What does that mean?
Right.
It means nothing to them.
Yeah.
That's where they just totally – I'm in agreement with you. They should have planted seed. If they want to use Blofeld, they should have planted seed with him much longer. Because now they get – like I said, they get this big reveal that's supposed to be like, and guys like me, you, and John are like, that's cool. But like I said, everybody else and the vast majority of people watching Bond movies now pretty much started with Brosnan going, who?
If not Craig.
It doesn't mean anything to me. Right. So, yeah, I actually went out of my way and kind of polled my friends my college friends. And I said, hey, I know I'm the big Bond guy. I just kind of want to know what Bond movie kind of pulled you in. And almost unanimously, it's Goldeneye. So I think a lot of these people who are watching it got pulled in Goldeneye, or like you said, once Craig took over. So Blofeld means nothing to them.
Yeah.
So like, why waste such a big reveal on something that's just like, okay, he's a guy.
I want to echo what you're saying there. First of all, I rewatched this movie this weekend.
Okay.
Because it's on Amazon Prime, and I think like you're saying, they should have done the Blofeld thing like Thanos.
Yeah.
In the Marvel Universe, just have him appear in the background, have some of the other bad guys meet with him and grovel at his feet to show how awesome he is or whatever. You don't have to say his name. He doesn't have to say a word. He just has to be there like a shadow.
Mm-hmm.
And but I think where they messed up is trying to do like the James Bond backstory about his family and that it's his foster brother. Blofeld is his foster brother. I don't care. Blofeld just needs to be the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
He needs to be the guy in charge of the international, organization of super criminals or whatever. He doesn't have to be Bond's foster brother and have a personal thing against him. He just wants to destroy the planet.
Right.
So, that part was trying to put two birds with one stone, kind of. And I think that's to me, and force both of those in one movie.
Right.
Which, so I think that's kind of to me where they lost it. But there's a lot of other good stuff in this movie. Like you said, the Day of the Dead scene and the scene Jared referred to where they go and the bad guys grab the girl from the clinic on top of the mountain and Bond chases him in the airplane. And then at one point the wings get knocked off, and he's chasing him downhill in the airplane with no wings on it.
Yeah.
That's really well done. It's funny, but it's not silly.
Right.
And the car chase in Rome is great. The bad guy's driving a big Lamborghini, and Bond's driving that car, like Jared said, he stole. So that those things I really appreciated. And I like, I thought, you know, what's his name? The wrestler was a good thug bad guy.
Drax.
Dave Bautista.
Yeah.
Drax the Destroyer.
Yes.
So I thought he was good.
Yeah, he is.
So, but I also thought like the big, like you said, there's the plot elements, and then they go to the bad guy's headquarters, and then like Bond escapes and shoots a natural gas tank, and it's like, boom, it's over.
Yeah, it's so. Just, think about this. The times that we've really loved Blofeld is when he's on screen and you don't even see his face, and he's on screen for about 8 seconds petting the cat and giving orders to number two and number three or something like that. The times that we don't like Blofeld is when he's on the screen running around doing stuff. And so they went with the Blofeld on the screen running around doing stuff. Now, if he had been the shadowy guy at the board meeting, just that was great. I liked him sitting at that big table, you know, and Bond is up there and they know he's there. That was great. That was very similar to the scene in Quantum of Solace in the opera that we thought was like the best part of that movie. But when he then starts running around doing stuff, it's just, so. Okay, well, so.
I'm the author of All Your Pain, James.
Show, don't tell, Ian. Show, don't tell.
I have one more small rant, yes. And I do love this movie, but I want to point something out, and I picked it up from some, I wish I could give credit off of something I saw on like YouTube or something, but somebody summarized it up really well. This movie went out of its way to tell a backstory between James Bond and his villain and why he does what he does, and you need a story like that for Batman. You need to know why a man dresses up like a bat and goes and does that. You do not need a backstory for James Bond. What his backstory is on his tax forms. He is a government agent. He wakes up and fights crime. The end.
That's it.
And I thought that was a pretty good summation. Like, you don't. Why are we wasting time on Bond's backstory? He punches his clock. He goes to work, and we love to watch it happen. Don't waste our time on this convoluted backstory.
It was
anyway,
real,
I thought that was a neat point that I saw, and I agree with it.
It was a real misstep, and I hope that they'll get different screenwriters in and get us back to the good stuff. Last one in this group, and we'll take a quick break. Die Another Day. Now, this was Pierce Brosnan's last effort in 2002. It is widely derided as one of the worst because this is the one with the ice castle thing and the invisible car and surfing on the tidal wave or whatever it was, surf the windsurfing. So, John, it is your turn. Tell us.
Wind up the crank, John. Let's go.
Tell us the quote-unquote highs and the lows about Die Another Day.
It's time for you to pull a Plexico on Spectre and just go for it.
No, because I can be short and sweet. This is probably my least favorite James Bond movie. I hate the North Korean stuff. They torture him. He escapes. You know, I don't like that part at all. You know, eventually he gets out. He goes and meets Halle Berry and stuff. You know, he goes and does a sword fight. They go to Iceland where they're at the ice castle palace thing, and they have this satellite which can shoot solar energy and blow stuff up. And
there's two other egregious things you haven't even mentioned yet.
Well, I could
you'll have your say, man.
Pile on if you want to take a shot.
Is that everything? Man, well, do you have anything good to say about it before we move on to Jared?
No.
So matter of fact.
There's nothing good.
John Cleese is M, and I no.
Okay. All right. So noted. Jared. Die Another Day. Good Lord. Follow that.
That was his perfect comedic time. Do you have anything good to say? No. Like you were insulted.
I know. I feel like I've insulted my dear friend now, and he's not going to speak to me again for daring to ask if there's anything good to say about Die Another Day.
Good thing to say. Okay. I'll disagree a little bit with John, but not much. This is a bottom tier Bond movie to me. I actually like the North Korea. My favorite part of the movie is probably the theme song in the opening credits, because I like the fact that we get to see the downside of espionage. Because we always get to see Bond with his fast cars and his women and all the cool action, and he always comes out on top. This shows us the downside of being a spy. He got captured. He got tortured. I appreciated them showing us that side of things. So, like, when I was working at the movie theater when this came out, I was working there almost specifically so I could watch it before it came out. Like, I used to work in a movie theater in college. I was no longer in college. I was in my Air Force career. But I was living in the town where my old college friend managed a theater, and she got me a job putting the movies together so that I could preview them, basically so I could watch movies early. I did it specifically for this. So I'm all amped about it, right? And it starts out, the North Korea stuff is pretty good. It's a lot of action. I'm like, cool. Then he gets captured. I'm like, yeah, okay. He's getting tortured, and we never get to see this before. And then just like after that, it just goes downhill the whole way. Not a lot of redeemable stuff. I mean, there's a lot of Easter eggs, since it was like the – wasn't it the –
40th, I believe.
20th Bond, I think, right?
Wait, yeah. I want to be clear. You're saying the movie peaks when he's getting tortured and it's downhill after that?
He's getting tortured.
It was the 40th. It was the 40th anniversary movie.
Wanted to be clear. It's peaked when he's getting tortured and it's downhill after that.
Scorpion torture is the peak of the movie. Yes. After that, I mean, like I said, I like the little Easter eggs that you can find in all the little hidden stuff from the other movies, all the way to the – he picks up the book, Birds of the West Indies, yeah, by James Bond, where Flynn got the name. My wife actually went on like eBay and bought me that actual book for my birthday a couple years ago. What a cool gift, right?
That's nice.
So anyway, I like all the little Easter eggs. I mean, Brosnan as Bond is always good to watch. But, man, Halle Berry was like an absolute boat anchor.
Yeah,
she was just – terrible dragging everything down. The whole Gustav Graves, as my brother puts it, the last fight, he's like, my brother describes it as James Bond fights RoboCop on a crashing airplane.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it's oh god, this is the one I watched most recently, so it's very fresh in my mind. I never like it when they use actual songs in the movie. They play like London Calling when Gustav Graves parachutes in. That gets on my nerves.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything gets on my nerves. I guess that's a long rant. Let me sum it up by saying this. Bond movies oftentimes will mirror what's popular. You know, kung fu movies are popular, so you get me with the golden gun that's got a lot of kung fu in it. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fast and the Furious was popular when this came out. That's all you need to know. If you love Fast and the Furious movies, we're going to have a hard time being friends. And any James Bond movie that mirrors the Fast and the Furious franchise.
Jerry, yeah. I enjoy Fast and Furious movies.
All right. And can we mute him remotely, or does this – how does Skype work now? We can still be friends, John, but I'm not a Fast and the Furious guy. And when James Bond tries to copy that, like kind of capture that audience with the tricked out cars and the doing flips and the shooting the missiles, and I'm just like, nah, I'm officially lost. But it's still a Bond movie, so it's better than most movies. I'm done ranting.
All right, here's my view on Die Another Day. There's several things I do like about this movie. A, it's one of only four Pierce Brosnan movies that we have, and he is my favorite Bond, and so I like it because I get two more hours of Pierce Brosnan Bond. It could be worse than the worst Bond, but if I've got 2 hours of Pierce Brosnan as Bond, I'm going to like at least that much about it. With the notable exception of Halle Berry, who does indeed drag the movie down, she's a good actress in a lot of things, but not in this. I like the cast. I like Toby Stevens as Gustav Graves. He's so smarmy. We had a villain show, and I ranked him a bit higher than John did because I thought he was a very good love to hate him kind of a smarmy villain. The fact that he's a North Korean man who has done genetic therapy to turn himself into a snotty British guy is kind of bizarre. I agree. But speaking of which, I love the North Koreans being the bad guys in this. I thought that was overdue and really cool. I love the DMZ being in it. I thought that was really cool. It's the only movie we really get to see the DMZ. I love Rosamund Pike as kind of the flip character that turns out to be evil. I really love that about it. I love that Pierce Brosnan is so relaxed in this his fourth Bond movie that he's like smoking cigars in Cuba and just hanging out with the guy, his friend there. That was really cool.
Very glorified Cuba, by the way.
Yeah.
Actual Cuba, not nearly as, yeah. as glorious.
Exactly.
As...
so there's a lot I do like about it. But I agree that there are several things about it. Madonna, the theme song is horrible. No, actually the torturing part, I agree more with Jared. I like that because it's neat to see something different of Bond actually getting captured and trying to get information out of him. And I love that when he escapes, he's got the beard and everything. He goes to that 5-star hotel yeah, and walks in and just like, they're all like, oh, Mr. Bond, you know, and give him his suite, you know, and everything. That's just fantastic. So there's a lot about this movie I really do like. I mean, I agree it's one of the lesser efforts, but there's a lot about it that I really do like. So, all right. Any last thoughts about any four of these before we do our votes?
I do want to defend one thing that Die Another Day gets a lot of crap for. People hate the invisible car.
Yes.
But I do like to tell people that in my time in the military, I did work in a lot of special technology type of things, and that technology does exist.
I don't know.
It's not made up. I mean, you can go on YouTube, and the Koreans will show you a jacket that they've made using many cameras that picture from the front and project in the rear, and it makes some... It kind of makes people look like the Predator. Remember when the Predator was invisible?
Yeah.
It looks like that. It's really funky looking. So I do stand up for the car a little. I mean, obviously it doesn't work turn it invisible, but it makes it really hard to see. So I do like to defend the car just a little bit. That's my only alibi for Die Another Day.
Well, I mean, seriously, it's a Bond movie. Why is a car that can digitally camouflage itself so much more ridiculous than some of the things we've seen in other Bond movies? I think it was
we're sort of adding in our brains a certain amount of ridiculous that we'll take, and it just exceeded its totals at some point.
Oh, that reminds me. I mentioned this to Jared off the air before. I don't think I've ever mentioned it to you, John. But well, John, you watch Veep? It seems like you do.
Some.
Okay.
Seen all of it.
There's a guy on there that's the big, tall, hulking guy named Jonah that everybody just insults all the time. Yes. He's such a jerk. The best Bond joke on there ever, and the only one, but one of my favorite Bond references, was that they were insulting Jonah on one episode, and they said, well, what do you know? You were too busy biting through James Bond's cable car cable. And I was like, yes, Jaws reference, yes. That was awesome. So anyway, all right, well, let us vote. From Russia with Love, Jared, 3, 2, 1, or 0?
Russia with Love gets a 1. Plus 2, I tricked you.
It gets a 3. Da, da, da. John, from Russia with Love, 3, 2, 1, 0?
3.
And I'm going to have to give it a 3, yes. All right, so 9 full points. It wins all of its matches.
We haven't had a lot of ones that just cleaned up like that.
That's... You Only Live Twice, Smoke Through, and Goldfinger, Smoke Through. This is the third one to go undefeated in the opening round of play.
Woo!
All right, Woo! The Spy Who Loved Me with Roger Moore. John, The Spy Who Loved Me, 3, 2, 1, or 0? Remembering that your other two are Spectre and Die Another Day, so...
I know. Well, 1.
Really? Okay.
I'm torn.
It's okay. You be you, John. You be you. I'm gonna love the Fast and the Furious. It's okay.
All right. Spy Who Loved Me gets a 1 from John. Jared, Spy Who Loved Me.
I'm going to give it the 2.
I'm going to give The Spy Who Loved Me... You know, I want to give a 2 to Spectre. I want to so bad, but I can't. This one gets the 2. I think we know how this is going to play out. Jared, Spectre, you can't give a... you can't give a 3, and you can't give a 2, right? So 1 or 0 gets your 1. I thought that was going to play out. John, Spectre.
2.
It gets the 2. I got to give Spectre the 1. Because there's a lot I do like about it, but... And I think we all, therefore, give Die Another Day 0, 0, 0. And it's funny because I have
Van.
Yes?
-1.
And I gave it a sad face.
I just gave it a middle finger is what I gave it. So there are Bond movies that I have lower, that I have a lower scale of zero than that one. It's not my least favorite Bond movie, but yeah, out of these four, it gets my zero. All right, really quick, take a quick break here because I have to say that we have to thank our sponsors, and we've got new sponsors since our last broadcast. So if you go to www.patreon.com/VanAllenPlexico, that's basically the White Rocket. I even changed the name now to where it says Van Allen Plexico slash White Rocket Entertainment. But P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/VanAllenPlexico, or you can just go to patreon.com and search for Van Plexico. That's how you can be part of the show and help us stay on the air, help us pay the bills. Our existing patrons that we thank so much, we always start out with Nicholas Cottrell, our platinum level sponsor. And then we also have Chris Thrash as our newest patron, along with Phil Amthor of WeHaveDonuts.com. We appreciate Phil. And then, of course, David Medinas, Mark Squire, Dave Powell, some Jared Albrecht guy, Rich Reimer, Michael Kirshner, Bill Matthews, Joey Miller, and Matthew Wagstaff. So all you guys, quite a few, and we're doing very well on patrons. We're still not to our goal, but we're a lot closer than we were. So jump on board. As little as $1 a month, you can help our programs stay on the air and help us produce other cool stuff like the comic that Jared and I are excitedly working on now and other stuff. So patreon.com/VanAllenPlexico. Okay. Now we go to our last group. We're to our last opening round group, and that is Group E, Casino Royale, For Your Eyes Only, The Living Daylights, ooh, interesting, and Diamonds Are Forever. So, Mr. Ringer, Casino Royale from 2006, the first Daniel Craig movie. Highs and lows for you.
All right. I really enjoyed this movie. Introduced Daniel Craig. Excellent opening sequence where he chases the guy from the construction site, basically through the construction site. The guy does all the parkour and they end up fighting on top of the crane, and then he goes, follows him into the embassy and gets in a shootout at the in basically another country's embassy and shoots his way out and causes an international incident. And but I thought that scene, you know, really set the tone in terms of him as a James Bond. A lot of travel. The climax of the movie is basically a high stakes card game where in the middle of it, he gets poisoned and has to, jump start his heart.
To quote Motley Crue, jump start my heart. Yes.
He has to jump start his heart. at a separate break in the card game, he has to kills a couple of guys and falls down a flight of stairs and gets, you know, beat up pretty bad, but in both cases he comes back and keeps playing and eventually wins. And he falls for the girl and they sail away together, but the girl is actually, you know, double crossing him. They go to Venice and they have a shootout in a house in Venice, basically, that collapses and the girl dies. So, and then at the end. So it really was kind of a how did he become 007? But also, I really liked it because I think it showed, you know, the Daniel Craig Bond was a Bond that just kept coming.
Yeah.
Like he was going to take hits and get knocked down and stuff was going to happen to him and it wasn't going to go according to plan perfectly, but he was going to get back up and keep coming and coming and coming. So that's what I really liked about him as Bond. And I like the parkour scene at the beginning. I like the card game and the stuff around in the hotel with his car and stuff. And I like kind of the double cross where he thought it was the, you know, the other guy that was helping them at Monte Carlo, wherever the card game was, but it would turn out to be the girl, and he actually sent that guy to be, you know, tortured and then had to make up with him in the next movie. So I enjoyed it. You know, I thought it was really well done. And there was one really disturbing torture scene of Bond in the middle of it, but it's, you know, it's not rated G. I liked it. So
Good stuff. Jared, Casino Royale.
Okay. I feel like I'm in kind of a minority, and I'm not as big on it as most people, although there's a lot I like about it. A lot of people just blown away. Casino Royale was so good. And I think it has just a lot to do with my personal experience, because I think I tried to take the feeling that I got from GoldenEye after we'd had a Bond hiatus and came back with a new Bond directed by Martin Campbell, nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I was just like, yes. Okay, so now flash forward to, what is this? It would have to have been 2006.
Yep.
2006, I got deployed to Iraq. And not a fun point in my life, but I'm in Iraq, and I know this movie's coming out. It came out while I was there. And I'm just like, oh, I want to see this movie so bad. You know, it's going to be Martin Campbell. I'm going to get that GoldenEye feeling again. And I got home from Iraq just in time to catch it on like a 50-seat dollar theater house. So I still was able to see it on the big screen. Mm. And it didn't give me the GoldenEye feeling. And I walked out feeling less than excited. Now, I recalibrated that and said, okay, you can't go in expecting GoldenEye. Now watch it again as its own. And I did like it better the second time through, but I still, my personal experience with it was, frustration a little bit. But having said that, let's talk about what is good about it. And I totally agree with John. The opening scene sequence is probably one of the best opening sequences in any Bond movie. This one is actually fairly faithful to the book all the way down to the torture scene. I was surprised that that torture scene was in the book that was written so long ago, but it is. I love the part where he blows up that dude at the airport. That is just cracks me up every time.
Yeah.
Yes.
The theme song is awesome.
Yeah.
It's straight up awesome. My downsides on it, not just that. Again, I think I realize it's unfair for me to say I want the same feeling I had with GoldenEye. So the things that I do pick out that I go, is like John pointed out, he said himself, the climax of the movie is when he wins the card game. And then there's like another 40 minutes of movie.
Yes.
No, it's true. It does peak way before the end.
Yeah. Yes. And I know I'm with the wrong crowd with this explanation, but it made me feel like Return of the King. Like it peaked and then there was like another hour.
No, but it's a fair description of the narrative of the movie, because it did emotionally and, you know, action-wise peak at that point. And then there's like the whole last 30 or 40 minutes is this afterward. And you keep thinking, is it over?
Right.
Is it over?
Yes.
They're in the boat sailing away. Is it over?
Is it over?
Yep.
Yeah, and exactly. That's kind of the feeling of like, okay, yeah, it just – John hit the nail on the head. Emotionally, it hit a high, and then it just kind of – okay. It wasn't bad. It just kind of – I felt a little deflated, almost a pun based on that building that sunk. Anyway, and I overall have my only problem with Craig, which is funny because, Van, I know you're not a big fan of Craig either, but it's kind of for almost two different reasons or almost two the same reason. Anyway – a lot of people just raved about him, like, oh, you know, he brought Bond back to the basics, and he's hardcore, and he's a little more emotionless, and he's more of an assassin, and I like that too. But Timothy Dalton did it first, and everybody poo pooed Timothy Dalton because he was on the heels of Moore, and it was like he was too serious and too down to earth and not enough fun. And then Daniel Craig does it, and everybody's like, this is brilliant, and I'm like, this has been done already. And being a big Dalton fan, I always kind of felt like Dalton got slighted on that. So that's just a little bit of emotional parts for me. But overall, I do think it's a good movie. It's a fun movie. Once I sort of removed myself from that give me the GoldenEye feeling, going back and watching it again, I do enjoy it more on repeat viewings.
That is it for me exactly. What you guys were both describing is how it's uneven. It peaks early. When I saw it the first time, I was exactly what John was saying. I kept saying, is it over? Is it over? Why are we still going? Are we still going? Now, if I had read the book before that, I would have understood it, because the book is as close to the book as you could make a 2006 movie be close to a book written back in the late 1950s. It really is close to that book, just with more high-tech stuff. You know, it's a bigger story, but it's the same plot, basically. And I would have understood they had to resolve the whole thing with the woman, and is she on his side? What's going on? Because in the book, Bond just spends like 50 pages going, why is she so withdrawn? Why isn't she speaking to me? Why is she being like this? And you're just like, oh my God, James, just walk out. Go, you know, do your, go, go sleep with the lady in the massage room like you did in Thunderball. Don't, you know, sit here, don't sit here chewing your fingernails over this one lady, for crying out loud. But anyway, here's the thing though. When I watched it the second time, I liked it more. And I watched it the third time, I liked it even more. And after Quantum of Solace came out, and I have all kinds of issues with Quantum of Solace we already talked about, but if you watch Gold, if you watch Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace together, and you ignore the bad parts of Quantum of Solace makes Casino Royale even better because it explains stuff and finishes out that story. Mm-hmm. So having seen Quantum of Solace and the good parts of Quantum of Solace, the few that there are, I like Casino Royale much better now than I did in 2006. I mean, like, it went from lower half to top five or six for me. So, yeah, I you guys hit all the other points, but that's what it was for me, was understanding that it's not over after the card game. There's going to be a lot more, so just go ahead and get ready for that. And then understanding what's going on with that in terms of how she's being blackmailed and everything. And we got Mr. White for the first time because he gets shot. I love the very ending where Mr. White goes.
Great ending.
He's out in the yard.
When he gets to the ending.
Yeah, when it finally gets to the very ending and we finally get the Bond theme, right? You get that great, what up, boom, when he shoots him and all. Oh, that was great. And he throws him in the trunk, which is one of the things I love about Quantum of Solace is that we start out, Mr. White's in the trunk through that whole horrible chase. We get that great chase, and he opens the trunk up, and Mr. White's been banging around like in a paint shaker.
It's the only two Bond movies that start like 1 minute apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it works.
And so it really is, like you're saying, a continuation.
Yeah. All right, so that's Casino Royale. We talked that one pretty thoroughly. I don't remember who I went to, so let me just go to Jared. For Your Eyes Only.
Oh, goodness. For Your Eyes Only is I consider it a top-tier Bond movie, and I consider it Roger Moore's best.
1981, so, Roger Moore. I forgot to say. Yes, go ahead.
Yes, 1981, Roger Moore. I saw this movie maybe 100 times. We had some good friends. It was like a babysitter for me, and they had HBO. And in like 1982, I think they played it 3 times a day. And somehow I found a way to watch it 4 times a day on HBO. I'm not sure how I did that. But it's super great. I love everything about it. I love the opening scene with the nod to his wife at the cemetery. I love the comeuppance of Blofeld. I love the theme song. this mm-hmm. movie is all out James Bond action from beginning to end. We've got underwater battles with a submarine. We've got underwater scuba battles with a guy in a giant armored suit. Yep. We've got snow ski chases. We've got snow ski jumping. We've got guys on motorcycles with spikes on the tires chasing them down the hills. We've got mountain climbing battles. It's so jam-packed full of action. And Roger Moore is incredibly – he's at the top of his game. He's charming. And one of the things I like about this movie is actually what Roger Moore doesn't like about it. Roger Moore doesn't like how hard-edged he was. But I think he had a nice balance between his charm and his hard edge, especially when he kicked that dude off the side of the mountain. The guy who killed Luigi.
Yep.
When he kicked his car off. Roger Moore hates that scene, and I love it because that's James Bond is an assassin. Everybody forgets that. Mm-hmm. I don't think I'm going to be able to come up with anything negative to say, really. They drug him behind the boat over the coral, which is actually from Live and Let Die, the novel. But that's okay. Right.
Yep.
Great. I don't think I have anything negative to say. I love this movie. I think it hit me right in that sweet spot of my childhood. Mm-hmm. And it's just an adventure ride. It's a car chase. The car chase in Greece. Anyway, I could just name scenes all day.
Yeah.
It's fantastic.
I think I know how Jared's going to vote in this round. John,
I think you know where my three's headed.
John, talk about For Your Eyes Only.
No, I really, really enjoyed this movie. I mean, like Jared said, he drives the clunky car in the car chase. you know, trying to get away with the bad guys.
Yeah.
I love the crossbow. I love that the plot has kind of a double cross where he thinks he's working with the good guys, but he's not. I love this, like Jared was saying, the ski, downhill ski chase scene where on the motorcycles, and then I think eventually he goes over the ski jump, doesn't he?
He does.
is great. Like you're saying, the drag behind the boat scene and the underwater fights. I think it's so much good stuff in this movie. And then even at the end, there's the detente kind of thing where he throws the thing away and neither the Soviets nor the British get it. He's like, detente, comrade. And,
yeah.
You know,
oh, Gogol. I love Gogol.
Yeah. That's right. It's Gogol. It's your guy, Gogol. So, there's a couple of kind of weird parts. I mean, the part with the little figure skater girl.
BB.
You know, it was a little. But I like the Grease stuff, and I think this movie is really, really well done.
I would like to defend the part with BB, if I may.
James!
I just like the fact that, Bond gets every girl in every movie. And I like the fact that in this movie it showed that he does have some scruples. You know?
That's fair. That's a good
one. He brushed her off as gently as he could.
and you know what? I wouldn't have a problem with that either, except that the last thing Roger Moore needed in the 1980s was something emphasizing how much older he was. That was the last thing he needed, because
don't you ever say an unkind word about the dearly departed Roger.
There they are trying to make him seem as young as they possibly can when he's in his 50s, and they put out like a 16-year-old girl next to him. He looks 80. Bless his heart. I love him, but he doesn't need to be working with like a 16-year-old little bouncy girl. It just makes it's funny story-wise. It would have been funny if that was Pierce Brosnan. But it doesn't work with Roger Moore. It's creepy. It's horrible. I don't like it at all. So, well, here's the things that I do like about it. Well, no, let me say what I don't like about it first. There's that. There's the hockey team fight where I'm supposed to believe that like a whole hockey team full of, full muscular young guys, he beats them all up by just like tossing them aside or whatever. And it was silly. See, there's stuff about Moonraker people make fun of, and I'm like, every Roger Moore movie has stuff like that. You just don't like that it's in Moonraker. BB, and then there's the, give us a kiss, bark. The bird is, it's a funny plot point, and it probably works in the novel, if it's in the novel or whatever, but it's just kind of...
The bird is what tells them where to find the ATAC. Man.
Exactly.
ATAC 2 Saints Hill.
And then you get the whole Margaret Thatcher thing at the end, and it's just like, oh, Mr. Bond, give her the kiss. Oh, Mr. Bond.
It's even funny when you describe it.
Oh, but the things that I do like about it, it's got a great villain in Julian Glover. In fact, it's got two Game of Thrones guys in Charles Dance and Julian Glover, which is kind of cool. This is like the Game of Thrones of James Bond movies. I like his ally, Topol. He's pretty cool. And I like the switch they do where first he thinks Topol's the bad guy and they switch that around. It's got one of the most gorgeous and cool Bond girls of all in Carole Bouquet. She's fantastic. I just love her to death. And it even has Pierce Brosnan's real-life first wife in it as that countess that's pretending that she's from like Liverpool, but she pretends to be French or whatever, that gets run over on the beach by the dune buggies. That was Pierce Brosnan's actual wife. That was where the Broccolis met Pierce Brosnan and said, you're going to be my next James Bond. So there's a lot of cool stuff about it that I do like. And it is cool to have one that has more skiing. It's always welcome to me to have Bond in skiing, like we did in The Spy Who Loved Me and On Her Majesty's Secret Service and others. This is another one of the snowy Bonds, and I like that too. So good stuff. Okay, so John, from 1987, and this is one of the... I didn't mention this, but Jared and I are going to be on a panel talking about the anniversaries of four James Bond movies at Dragon Con this year. And one of the four we'll be doing is the 1987 Living Daylights with Timothy Dalton, his first movie. So take us quickly through the highs and lows of Living Daylights.
Living Daylights. Timothy Dalton, James Bond, basically, at the beginning of the movie, he goes to Austria. He's supposed to get a defector. Girl is going to shoot him, and Bond stops her, and then they grab the guy and they send him through this pipeline to defect. But then he ends up getting grabbed away, and they fake out this whole thing like the Soviets are doing the death to spies thing, but really it's this plot where this defector and his his buddies, Joe Don Baker, is this mercenary, and they have this scheme in Afghanistan, but they're bringing back like Smet Spionim, but it's not real. It's like a fake out thing for the British. What they're doing is, selling drugs and stuff out of Afghanistan. So Bond goes there. There's a really good scene where Dalton is on the back of a cargo aircraft hanging, and they have a fight. But there's another scene where he's working with a Mujahideen and I love that. And then Joe Don Baker, they have this kind of dumb fight at his fortress in Northern Africa at the end where they blow him up. I like Dalton. I think there's some good action in here and some cool stuff. I don't love the bad guys. You were making the comment about the silly stuff, but there's also a scene, like in this one where they, Bond and the girl get away by sledding down the hill in her cello case and that kind of thing. So, I don't know. That's my things, but I enjoy it. I watch it and I enjoy it, but I think it doesn't hold up to some of these other movies in terms of the quality. What do y'all think?
Good stuff. Jared, your take on The Living Daylights.
Ah, you mean the world's perfect James Bond movie. I'm happy to... I adore The Living Daylights. You know how I feel about Dalton. I steal a phrase from you, Van, that I got from you from doing this show. Sean Connery's the best Bond, but Dalton is my Bond.
There you go.
And
I respect
that. I don't know. I stole it from you. I do love this movie. John covered it pretty well, though. Although the pre-credit sequence is pretty good when they're doing like the little war game on the island.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Gibraltar. I'll be danged if I can remember what island that was.
It's the Rock of Gibraltar.
Gibraltar.
Right.
Yes.
I thought that was a neat reveal too, like because it was a new Bond and they kind of took their time revealing him.
Yep.
They kind of all the agents kind of jump in. And I love the little cool little stunt where he's fighting the guy and the Jeep goes off the cliff and he pulls the parachute, so he gets yanked out of the back, and then that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Again, I'm very biased once again by my personal experience. I had just moved to Germany. I'm an army brat at this time. A lot of this movie takes place in Austria and Germany, so it just felt in sync with my life. Plus I was a special agent with a car that had rocket skis. So that synced up nicely. it's just like when I watch it, it's like pure, like all these wonderful memories of my time living in Europe just flood back to me because this is the movie I watched when I was there. And I'm like, oh, I remember this and I remember that. So it does tie a lot in personally. I fully recognize that.
Right.
But it's John hit the nail on the head. The C-1, well, I don't know if it's the Russian version of a C-130. Yes. That cargo plane fight was cool. A lot of cool parachute work, because like they get yanked out of the parachute again at the end of the movie with the Jeep, and then he drives off to Karachi all charming and smooth. I love the harder edge Bond after Roger Moore, but I love that they have some neat little funny moments. I'm a big fan of the moment where he goes to pick her up and she's like, I got to go back for my cello, and he's like, no, no, no. And the very next scene, he's just sitting there all pissed off because
she's going to get her cello, right?
Back for her cello. I mean, anybody who's ever been married totally understands that feeling. Just that look on his face, he just really nailed it.
Yep.
But the actor that played the guy who was defecting but ended up being the bad guy, Koskov. That's not the actor's name. That's his
Krabby or whatever his name is. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he's good, but like it was funny. Just a few years later, we see him in The Fugitive, playing Dr. Richard Kimball's friend, and the minute I saw him, I was like, oh, you can't trust this guy, man. This is Jerry Foster.
Yeah, Jiro and Crowley. Oh,
I also want to point out that Living Daylights has John Rhys-Davies in it.
Yes, it does.
And he's got a pretty cool little role, too, like the way he works with Bond, even though like Bond's is kind of like on his own, and I just, much like Van, I like the helpers, and he kind of falls into cool helper territory for me. So yeah, I just, there's a lot of good action beginning in, a lot of good memories of my time in Europe, not so much in the Middle East. Second half of the movie's more bad memories.
I bet.
But I just think it was a really neat change of tone from the Roger Moores, and I was just enthralled by it, and I still am. I understand that I probably love it more than most, though. Over to you, Van.
Well, here's the things I don't like as much about it. It's got
your mouth.
It's got a super complicated plot. It's got one of the more complicated plots of any Bond film. I don't even want to go into it. It's just really a convoluted plot. I kind of get it after seeing it a million times in my life, but still. I'm not a huge fan of Dalton, and people always kill me. They always like want to defend Dalton by saying, well, he's like the book. And I'm like, well, I don't care. I'm not reading the book. I'm watching James Bond, the movie, as the tone that was set by Sean Connery and Roger Moore. I understand how the book is. That's fine. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here for Sean Connery and Roger Moore in some combination. I love Pierce Brosnan in part because he is Sean Connery and Roger Moore at the same time. That's why I love him. Timothy Dalton is neither Sean Connery nor Roger Moore. He's Timothy Dalton, and that, if you like that, that's great. I just don't. Joe Don Baker is a good American helper and a terrible villain. He just does not work in this part. Bring him back later and let him wear his Hawaiian shirts and help James, but not as Napoleon of Texas or whatever he is. The cello is funny because they act like it's this priceless artifact, and then they use it as a paddle as it's getting shot full of bullet holes. And I'm thinking, once you've shot it with a bullet hole, it's pretty much done as a cello, much less using it as a paddle when you're surfing or whatever on the case. But okay, whatever. I hate the theme music. I don't like Aha that much to begin with. They had one song, and I really don't like the theme song. We did a whole show about this, so you can go check that out. And lastly but not leastly, yay, Bond's ally in this movie is the Taliban. Woo! But
can you imagine how difficult that made my life when I got over to Iraq in 2006? Because people are like, well, then we got to deal with the Mujahideen. And I'm like, aren't those guys the good guys? And James Bond.
Oh, no.
I was so confused because of this movie. I was like, I thought these were the good guys.
Yeah, aren't they supposed to take us into the harem and give us wine and grapes and stuff? What's up with that? So,
And I'm not even really making a joke. I was like literally confused because of this movie.
That is hilarious. Well, there are several things I do like about it. We mentioned a couple. I love the Bond girl. Mariam Dabo is one of my favorite Bond girls. She's in the top 10. She's not in the top 4 or 5, but she's in the top 10. She's really cute and everything.
Have you seen the documentary she hosted?
I know she
Bond
hosted.
Girls.
I have not seen it, but I know it. I know about it, and I know that she hosts it, so I'm going to check it out.
I thought you'd enjoy it. I just want to recommend that. Okay.
I like that it starts in Gibraltar, and you see the Gibraltar monkeys. Mira is a huge monkey fan, so she loves the beginning of this movie where the monkeys, because they really have like 300 wild macaques or whatever that run around that island, and they just do whatever they want. They take whatever they want, and as somebody put it on, I think it was the guy on You Only Live Splice, who said, tourists from all over the world pay large amounts of money to come to Gibraltar and be bitten and pooped on by monkeys for the privilege of being bitten and pooped on by monkeys. It does have John Rhys-Davies, who I adore. He's Gimli, and he is in Noble House and the James Clavell stories and all. I really like John Rhys-Davies. And then finally, the one person in it that we haven't mentioned is the Milkman. He's the coolest thing in the whole movie.
Oh, yeah, the Milkman. He is cool. He's a cool villain. The Milkman, I think, is his name.
Does he kill somebody with his headphone cord?
With his,
hell yeah, he does. And the theme song of the movie.
And he's got the explosive milk bottles, hand grenades. And, he's great. He's kind of a Dolph Lundgren-looking guy. I don't know who he actually is, and I'm not going to go look him up, but... Yeah, he's one of the coolest things about this movie. So,
but that one random agent really gives him what for in that kitchen fight.
Yeah, he does give him
it
a decent
fight. It is the best fight that doesn't involve James Bond in any of the movies.
That's a good point, yeah. Yeah, somebody gets their face in a stove, don't they, or something like that?
Yeah, that random agent took a face to the stove and kept fighting that dude.
There
that
you go. Yeah, that's awesome. All right, so Living Daylights, I like it okay, but there's a lot about it I don't like. And lastly, out of all the Bond movies, as we were running close to the end of our time here, Diamonds Are Forever. This was Sean Connery had left the franchise after You Only Live Twice in 67. And so in 69, they went out and got George Lazenby from Australia, an underwear model. And we've agreed we like him in that, but it didn't do the business.
In the movie, not in an underwear model.
I'm glad you clarified that for everybody. Thank you. So that it didn't do the business that they hoped, and so they went back and threw money at Sean Connery. And since Sean Connery's whole thing doing the James Bond movies is you're not paying me enough, he finally got to get paid. He got paid finally, and he came back and did a movie that, for many years, I lived under the delusion was one of the better Bond movies because it's the one that ABC used to show like every Sunday night on ABC for
yes.
years. John, do you remember that? Did you see it on ABC a bunch when you were a kid?
I did.
Yeah. But then as you get older and you see all the movies, you start to realize, John, tell us what you started to realize, yes or no, about Diamonds Are Forever as you got older and had seen all the Bond movies. What do you think of it, good or bad, now?
I think it's not in the bottom, five or whatever, but it's not at the top. Some of it is just a little weird or whatever. It's got some parts I really like that they go to Las Vegas and it's got the two assassin guys.
Yes.
But some of the other stuff, the Mr. White stuff in Las Vegas and a lot of the plot revolves around Blofeld and plastic surgery and having doubles and that kind of stuff. And then trying to steal diamonds and Felix Leiter. I don't know. What else do you want me to say? I'm a little bit running out of steam here, but it's fine, as a TV ABC Bond movie, but when you put it up against these other ones, it doesn't have the plot, the stunts, the action, the villains to carry the thing. It's kind of got some 1970s Las Vegas villains. I don't know.
Yeah, that's fair. Jared, what do you think about our last movie, Diamonds Are Forever?
It's funny. I kind of pendulum swung on Diamonds Are Forever. Like you guys, I saw it, I think, a lot on TV when I was a kid, and I liked it. And then I kind of, for the longest time, probably until I was well into college, maybe even after, I considered it the worst James Bond movie. Mm. And now that I go back on it and watch it again, though, I don't think that's true anymore. I don't think it's the worst. I think it's not top tier, but it's nice to have Connery back. Willard White was always he's kind of fun and interesting, and Bambi and Thumper and Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd are bizarrely entertaining.
Shady Tree.
That's right, Shady Tree. It's got some pretty funny moments in it, but they're kind of awkwardly funny. I do love the part where Blofeld says something effective. We could go ahead and blow up Kansas, but people might not notice that for weeks or something like that. And I guess not terribly politically correct these days, but when Bond comes face to face with the rat, and one of us smells like a Tarte handkerchief. Oh, I'm sorry, it's me.
I love the rat.
I don't care if it's politically correct or not. It's still freaking funny. it was kind of neat because it was a little more, or maybe even a lot more lighthearted for your Connery performance, which kind of led nicely into the rolling into Roger Moore, which got a lot more lighthearted as they went. Otherwise it's kind of just, it's not like they did anything specifically wrong. It just falls a little flat and it's just kind of less than memorable than the other films.
Well,
that's all I got.
The problems I have with it are one is that we were set up from the 69 movie before it to expect the grim retribution on Blofeld. And instead, it's like we get that opening bit in the mud factory thing where he thinks he kills Blofeld. But then after that, he doesn't really seem to have any particular hatred for Blofeld, even though he's just killed his wife, you know. So that was kind of weird. I like Charles Gray as Blofeld. I know that most people hate Charles Gray as Blofeld, but as a kid, he was my Blofeld because I was never seeing on Her Majesty's Secret Service. They never really showed that on ABC. I was seeing this. So Charles Gray was my Blofeld. I remember when I saw You Only Live Twice later on, I was like, oh, this is a creepy Blofeld. I like my Charles Gray Blofeld. Bring him back. He was cool. Even though he does cross-dress, that was, which is kind of weird. Blofeld,
I forgot about that.
Cross-dressing Blofeld is not a highlight of the series, but it,
no.
but it does have Mr. Wendt and Mr. Kidd, who I love. I love the bit with the rat where he comes out of the pipe in his tuxedo and says, "I was just walking my rat." It's got
See, it's got some good humor in it.
It does. It has one of the greatest exchanges of dialogue with a Bond girl that Sean Connery ever had, where what's her name, Wood, the sister of the one that died.
Sister of Natalie Wood.
Natalie Wood's sister, I can't think of her name now, Wood.
I can't either.
She Yeah, she comes up and says, "Hi," and they're at the blackjack table or the dice table or whatever, and she says, "Hi, I'm Plenty." And he goes, "Well, of course you are. I can see that," or something like that, right? And she says, "Plenty O'Toole." And he says, "Name for your father, I suppose." That's one of the best Sean Connery lines ever. That was classic. And as a kid, it just went right over my head. I remember the first time I got it when I was much older going, "Oh, wow, they've been saying that all these years, and I never got it until now. That's hilarious." But the thing I hate about it the most probably is the ending where he gets Blofeld in a little capsule and is just banging him against the wall. And that's the last we see. It doesn't explode, doesn't kill him, doesn't arrest him. He just kind of slaps him around a little bit in the capsule, and that's the end of the movie. And I'm going, okay. Though we do get Jimmy Dean as Willard White going, "Baja California? I ain't got nothing in Baja California." I like all the Willard White stuff is great. So anyway, so yeah, I there's stuff about it that's a lot of fun. All the shade tree. Oh, and the one other thing, John and I talked about this in our show about this movie, is that they cut out the part that explains Plenty's death, because she's in the hotel room with him and they throw her out over the balcony into the water, and the, you know, Bond is like, "Nice shot," and the gangster's like, "I didn't know there was a pool down there," and then later they find her dead in some random swimming pool at Jill St. John's house, and we find out later that there's a whole missing set of scenes there where she came back up from the swimming pool, back up to Bond, to Jill St. John's room, went through her purse, got her driver's license, got her address, went to her house, and the gangsters thought, when they went there, thought she was Jill St. John and killed her in the swimming pool. That doesn't make any sense in the movie because they leave all that out. You just find Lana Wood in the swimming pool and you don't know how she got there. It's so bizarre. So now, if you didn't know, now you know how come she's in the swimming pool. All right, that's our last one. So let's do our voting of our points. So, John, 3, 2, 1, or 0, Casino Royale.
Let me say before I vote, I think maybe this is the strongest group to me.
Yeah, it is.
It's tough decisions in this group. Yeah.
There's no Die Another Day in this group.
Agreed.
I'm going to go 2 for Casino Royale.
Okay, so 2%. Bearing in mind, everybody, that we've got Casino Royale, For Your Eyes Only, The Living Daylights, and Diamonds Are Forever. Okay, Jared, Casino Royale.
If you've got like a boo hiss thing on your soundboard, now's the time to cue it up.
Uh-oh.
I'm giving Casino Royale a 1.
Wow. Wow.
Go ahead. Boo. I know everybody's booing me.
Well, I'm going to give Casino Royale a 3. I think it's my favorite of these. And it's come up to that point from not being anywhere down there. It has earned its way up through multiple viewings, and I give it that credit. All right, Jared, let's go ahead and roll on into For Your Eyes Only. 3, 2, 1, or 0?
I give it 3.
There's Jared's
love that movie.
Big movie, For Your Eyes Only 3. John, For Your Eyes Only...
3.
Wow.
I'm going to give For Your Eyes Only a A1. I like it. It is a tough group. Tough crowd. Tough group. But it's not my top favorite. All right. John, the Living Daylights.
One.
Living Daylights gets the one. It is a tough group. Jared, Living Daylights.
I gave it a 7.
You can't give it a 3, and I don't think...
I gave it a 2. It's my 2.
Okay. You gave Casino Royale a 1, right?
I did.
Okay. I'm giving The Living Daylights my 0. I hate it, but that's just how it is.
Jared's coming through the internet for you.
I'm writing his home address, putting my phone on.
It's interesting that we're mostly all disagreeing on these. We've only had one where we both... at least even two of us said the same thing. Okay.
See, John, I've plotted here. I've sent Van a bunch of gifts and little things in the mail. So the next time he gets something in the mail from me, he'll open it. You see what I'm saying? That's where this is going. Kaczynski style. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Jared, diamonds are forever.
Unfortunately, I had to give it a 0. I don't. It's not a sad face 0 like I gave Die Another Day or Quantum of Solace. I'm sad to give it a 0, but with this group, that's where I had to go.
I think, John, I think you have your 0 left as well, correct?
0.
Yeah. And I give Diamonds Are Forever my 2, just because I love it from nostalgia really as much as anything. I'd be more likely to watch it probably than even For Your Eyes Only. Interestingly, the way that played out now is that I didn't say it. I'll go back and tell you the numbers for the other group. But let me mark it. For Your Eyes Only wins the group from a 5 seed with 7 points. Casino Royale a close second with 6 points, so they're both going to go through. And I don't know if either one of the other ones are going to get through just because they don't have many points. Living Daylights finishes with 3, and Diamonds Are Forever finishes with 2. So those two may both get bumped out. I don't know. Diamonds Are Forever is probably done. The other group tonight, From Russia With Love, swept 9 points. It's like Brazil in the World Cup. The Spy Who Loved Me finished 2nd, pretty much in seed order on this group, with 5 points. Spectre with a respectable 4, and Died Another Day, and that day was today, was 0. So that's how it came out. All right, so... I can just, off the top of my head, I can tell you the ones we know are going to be into the second round, On Her Majesty's Secret Service and You Only Live Twice, From Russia With Love and The Spy Who Loved Me, GoldenEye and Dr. No, Live and Let Die and Thunderball, and For Your Eyes Only and Casino Royale, Goldfinger and Skyfall. Those are all pretty much guaranteed to be in, and... Of the 4 wild cards, I'm not going to do the math right now. You'll find out when you tune in for our next episode. But I think that you have a decent shot of seeing in the wild card. Spectre, Moonraker, License to Kill.
Yes.
The Living Daylights. Or The Man with the Golden Gun. Actually, Living Daylights, The Man with the Golden Gun tied. I may have to do some kind of a tiebreaker with Living Daylights, Man with the Golden Gun. That will be very interesting. That will be very interesting.
Run a Twitter poll.
Well, we may have to do like a play-in, like the round of 64, you know, in the NCAA tournament, do a play-in match between those two. Or like in the World Cup when you get like the last place team from CONCACAF has to go play New Zealand or something for the last spot. So we'll do that next time. All right, so that's going to do it for tonight. When we reconvene for On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast next time, we will be doing the first knockout round where we're going to take the winners and the runners-up and the wild cards and do our first... We'll probably do 2 sets of battles. So we'll do the first of the 2 sets of battles of that round of 16, I guess. So, all right, guys. John, any last thoughts?
No, it's fun.
Good deal. Jared, any last thoughts?
If you remember nothing else from these shows, watch out for blimps.
It's always helpful. helpful advice on our show. Right. Watch out for slow-moving Zorin blimps. Absolutely.
They're sneaky fast.
They are sneaky.
They will come up out of nowhere, too.
All right, guys. The Under Magic Secrets podcast is going to get out of here for another episode. We'll see you in a couple of weeks with our first round of the knockout round on Her Majesty's Secret Podcast.
Team Dalton!
On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, we'll return.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.